Welcome back to the JX. I'm Mike Green. Imagine, if you will, a map of the United States. Now place tiny dots all over the map in your mind. Think of each dot as a monitoring station. My guest today is Adam Schultz, a professor at Oregon State University. OSU is home to the nation's largest mapping project of its kind, which provides scientists and power companies with vital information to help protect the nation's electrical grid from disturbances below the ground and from outer space. Welcome to the JX, Adam.
Thanks, Mike. It's really great to be on today.
Well, I have a ton of questions. So your map doesn't sound like any I've heard before. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's kind of a novel scientific effort. It was one that was launched about 20 years ago as part of a big push by American academic geophysics researchers through initially the National Science Foundation. It was a project called EarthScope. And the idea was to basically build a telescope pointing downward into the Earth rather than up into space using geophysical methods. And by that, I mean seismology, electromagnetic geophysics, which is what we specialize in, and also looking at careful measurements of ground deformation as the ground changes over time. So EarthScope launched, and we had a component of it. Oregon State University eventually became the lead entity in executing this project. And the idea here, it's kind of equivalent to, let's say you go to a hospital and get an MRI scan or a CT scan, and the radiologist is trying to look inside your body, and based on what they understand about some of the physical properties of your organs, they try to image different aspects of that and put a story together. And that's what we set out to do. For example, if you're an earthquake seismologist, you'll use earthquakes as your energy source, and you'll try to look inside the crust and maybe the upper mantle underneath the continent and look at the material properties that seismology can tell you about. We're doing the same thing, but we're looking at the electrical properties, the electrical conductivity of the rocks and the minerals that make up the crust and the upper mantle, in this case, over the entirety of the conterminous United States. So it's a 3D geological mapping exercise. And, you know, you would have thought this was done years ago, right, that we had a 3D geological map of the continent. But in reality, our mapping is really mainly based on surface observations of geology. And only a select few areas have had deeper investigations that get you a deep cross-section of what's underneath. And this was an effort to actually do that systematically across the entire continent. Okay? So that was the basic science of it, to try to study the structure and the evolution of the continent on the scale of the entire country.
So let me see if I understand this.
Yeah.
You gave, or you're giving the Earth, at least this continent, an MRI. And you're doing what with the image? What kind of data are you collecting?
Exactly. It's not exactly an MRI, that's a particular method, but we're doing the equivalent. So you can imagine we're now getting a three-dimensional image, if you'd like, of the interior, you know, what's under your feet in the crust and upper mantle, down to maybe 300 kilometers from the surface down. So what you're getting is, at every location underground, you're getting a value of a rock or mineral property called the electrical conductivity. So how well that material conducts electricity. That's the property we're trying to image. Okay. And you go, well, why do you want to do that? Well, it's a property that's sensitive to the composition of those rocks and minerals, the temperature, whether or not the rocks and mineral formations hold any kind of fluids. They could be, you know, water, saline fluids. They could be molten material, melt. Etc. So this is diagnostic when you combine it with other observations of other material properties and geological knowledge. It can actually tell you a huge amount about not only the structure of what's there, but you can piece together the formation of it, the whole evolution of how that got there. And it helps you identify possible sources of, for example, mineral deposits, right? You know, you can look deep and see where conditions were favorable to push mineral deposits up to the surface. So for critical minerals, or for, say, geothermal energy sources, or even looking at potential geohazards. And there are plenty. You know, we live in Cascadia, right, in our region, and there are plenty of hazards related to the fact that we live at a plate boundary, right? We have the oceanic plate subducting underneath the North American plate, right, and we're living right there on the margin. So this also gives you information about, what might be the relationship between what we're mapping and, say, how big earthquakes form.
That's quite interesting. So there's electricity coursing through the earth, I imagine, just like it courses through our brains. So this is an MRI for rocks instead of brains.
It's a good analogy. And then you ask, why is there electricity coursing through this in the first place? And this is really interesting. You know, people may not appreciate it, but you know, we all were aware of a big event a few months ago where we could see aurora down here, right down in Oregon, which is rare. And that was because of a huge solar storm. So we call that space weather, right? The Earth is orbiting inside the outer reaches of the sun's atmosphere. You know, we're not actually out in a perfect vacuum. So the sun is always emitting charged particles. And occasionally you get, or actually quite frequently you get, big solar flares that are so big that the charged particles actually escape the sun's gravity and they shoot out into space. We call that a coronal mass ejection.
Okay.
And every now and then, a big coronal mass ejection happens to intersect with where the Earth is in its orbit, and that profoundly disturbs our own magnetic field. It also leads to some of these charged particles getting trapped in our magnetic field, and they form electric currents above the atmosphere in the ionosphere. And you do a little bit of physics, and you'll see that when you have that happen, that sets up at ground level and below, electric and magnetic fields, electric currents are flowing. We call those telluric currents, pertains to Earth currents. So they're a natural phenomenon. They happen all the time. But during big solar events, they can be very strong. That's great for two reasons. It gives us a signal source for, you know, as you're saying, doing an MRI of the Earth, though we call the method not an MRI. We call it MT. It's magnetotellurics. Magneto for magnetic fields, tellurics for earth currents. So we measure both.
Okay, I have some more questions for you. And
sure.
But I just want to remind the audience, I'm talking with Adam Schultz, a professor at Oregon State University who oversees the recently completed mapping project of geoelectromagnetic currents nationwide. And you can join this conversation by email at jx@jeffnet.org. Now, there's someone who has asked a question. We got an email from Ken in Grants Pass, and he's wondering, are there any type of charge differences resulting from geomagnetic storms that make high-frequency radio noise?
Well, actually, what happens is during the geomagnetic storms, these big solar space weather events, you do impact radio frequencies. Not because the storms are generating signals at radio frequencies, but because they kind of mess with the ionosphere, you know, which is the layer of charged particles directly above the atmosphere. And that ionospheric layer, physicists call a waveguide. It allows radio transmissions to go for much greater distances than if that layer wasn't there. And so the big solar storms definitely interfere with that. They're changing the electric currents flowing in the ionosphere, and that can have a first-order impact on radio communications or other things like GPS, because you're interfering with a layer that the GPS signal from the satellites has to go through. So there are big impacts of the big solar events from what's happening up in the ionosphere.
So, Adam, how vulnerable do you think America's electrical grid is to these electromagnetic currents?
Sure. Well, that's the thing. When the power grid, you know, was first established, and the U.S. had one of the first power grids in the world, right? They didn't take into account in designing this that the transmission lines are grounded, and the thing they're grounded to has these currents flowing in it, these geomagnetically induced currents. So the system really wasn't designed for these extra currents that were flowing through the power grid. They just thought the currents flowing through the power grid were the ones they generated with the generators. So it turns out this can stress at substations, at the big transformers that underlie the power transmission network across the continent, these can stress during big solar events. And famously, for example, in 1989, in Quebec, in Canada, the entire power grid failed during a big solar storm. And that was a wake-up call. And you think, well, that's hard luck for Quebec, but actually the Canadian and American power grids are interconnected. So it had ramifications across all of North America. And also there were events further south in the U.S. itself. So that was the first wake-up call. In 2012, there was a huge coronal mass ejection from the sun. And we got very lucky because if the Earth was just slightly different in its orbit, we're talking about 10 days or so in its orbit, it would have slammed us head on. And the estimates were it would have profoundly impacted the power grid across the country, leading to a kind of failure called cascading failure modes, where you would have had large regional effects that would have taken months to years to fix because of the damage done to the infrastructure. So this got very high attention all the way to White House level, and it ultimately led to some of the funding we used to complete the what we call the USMT array, U.S. Magnetotelluric Array, which just got completed in June. So that's kind of the backstory that the power utilities, federal regulators, and even as I say, up at White House level, they began to understand that the vulnerabilities to large solar storms were real. Department of Homeland Security got involved and made estimates of what what they call a Carrington level event. This was an event that happened in the 1850s, a huge solar storm that was so huge there were auroras in the equatorial zone, and all the telegraph stations in the world started sparking spontaneously. And it took years to understand why this was happening, but if another Carrington event hit, there were estimates that the power grid would go down basically across the country. It would take years to recover, and the impact on human mortality when there's suddenly no electricity was enormous. So that's when things got very serious after 2012. And it turns out we were already underway on our survey for basic geological purposes. And in the course of doing this, it became obvious the data we were collecting was of very great importance in mitigating the risks to the power grid from events like the one we just missed in 2012.
So how will this new map help improve the process, and how much did it cost?
Okay, well, before we had this detailed three-dimensional view of how the electrical conductivity varies everywhere underfoot, the power industry didn't have accurate information about how intense the geomagnetically induced currents would be from a given solar storm event. So they would say, well, if the Earth's magnetic field has a big disturbance, we're going to estimate that in a substation, this is the intensity of the geomagnetically induced currents we're likely to see. And they were based on a lot of simplifying assumptions. Well, in the course of mapping the entire country, we found that those simplifying assumptions were almost always wrong. And they could be wrong by orders of magnitude, actually. So this is giving new information to the power utilities where they can say, oh, okay, these areas of the grid that I'm operating are under much greater risk than we understood, and they can do a couple of things. They can retrofit the big transformers with equipment that can help shunt some of the excess currents away. This is a little bit controversial because it's not clear if by doing that they're sending the problem just down the line to someone else. So this is a very active area of inquiry, but people are now doing this. Or they can also dynamically adjust the current flow in the grid to kind of take some of the areas that are going to be under stress and reduce that during the big geomagnetic
disturbance. Like create an artificial governor.
Well, kind of, yeah. I mean, they have the ability to basically reconfigure the circuit that is the power grid dynamically. They just need a little bit of time to do that, a little bit of notice. And what we're trying to do is give them as much information along those lines as possible.
Okay, well, we're going to have to leave it there. I've been talking with Adam Schultz, a professor at Oregon State's College of Earth, Ocean, and Atmospheric Science, about a new 3D map that can help protect America's electrical grid from disturbances below ground and from outer space. Thanks for joining me today, Adam.
been a pleasure. Happy to have a chance to let people know what we've been up to.
I'm Mike Green. The JX will return shortly with our final segment for today. Don't go away.